This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Dynamite from the post wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
It's Wednesday night, Rewind to Dynamite, coming your way. John Pollock here and Wei Ting. Wei, are you ready for the doubleheader tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I'm mentally prepared. Absolutely.
Well, we're going to be going late, folks, because tonight we're doing Rewind to Dynamite. And then we are jumping in about an hour over to the Post Wrestling Cafe. That's where all the cool kids are hanging out on a Wednesday night. So after our Dynamite review, you'll want to join us there as we are chatting. Who killed WCW? Will we get any answers after episode one? We're going to find out. And here to join us a little later on, your friend and ours, Brian Mann. He's gonna have some hot ones. He's going to have some hot takes for us after episode one of Who Killed WCW. So that's coming up in about an hour, postwrestlingcafe.com, in what is a very busy week of cafe activity.
I mean, it almost always feels like that, but this one especially so. Because we've got MCU later, we've got Rewind to SmackDown Collision Course, we've got Rewind Away coming up tomorrow, and then of course Bruce and Karen's New Japan Dominion review on Sunday.
Man, so, Wei nailed them all off the top of your head. I just put you on the spot and feel like nailed I all
know.
Of them.
I feel like I should know all that. Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that, and we are going to be doing reviews of Who Killed WCW throughout the month of June over this 4-episode run. If you want to get a quick interview with Evan Husney to catch up on kind of the making of the series. And I got to chat with him a couple of days ago. That is up on the site if you want to check it out. So given the packed schedule that we have tonight, we are going to be diving right into Dynamite. And for these Wednesdays, we're probably going to be going more news heavy on Pollock and Thurston. And then this portion of the show will be getting right into Dynamite. And then we will be doing Who Killed WCW. But how was your day, Wei? Everything going well in your neck of the woods?
I would say so. Yeah, if the weather's nice, then I tend to have a pretty nice day. You know, actually just kind of went out to the lake by lakeshore area by myself and just sat there.
Oh,
like,
that's
and
nice.
Just enjoyed, you know. Again, I really do appreciate not just like good weather, but like alone time these days. So that combination just like set my day off in a really nice way.
Well, my daughter has also gotten into enjoying alone time on Tuesday morning. And I emphasize early, early morning. She decided to wake up at 3 a.m, wide awake. And this was the start of her day. So for about an hour and a half, she just played in her room. She tries to wake up her brother at like 3:30 because she doesn't want to play by herself. And by like 5:30, I finally opened the gate and let her go downstairs to watch TV. And she went straight until 7:30 the next night. So she's up from 3 a.m. till 7:30 p.m.
That's my schedule.
And then she slept for 12 hours after that. I was like, okay, Evie, this cannot sustain. And please don't ever do this because I slept terribly from her. She is not very quiet at these hours either. When she's up, she wants everyone to know she is awake. So, Tuesday was a bit of a blur for me.
Well, goodness. I don't know what to suggest other than school's not that far away for her from what I hear. So she'll be knocked into a proper schedule hopefully by September.
We'll see. Or else there'll be a new Vice series. Who killed John Pollock? Okay, because the sleep might be my downfall. Well, let's get into tonight's edition of Dynamite from the Blue Arena in Loveland, Colorado. Nice to see the podcaster's microphone of choice getting its own arena.
Is that the actual company?
No, it's not, but it's I'm sure it's named after something that we'll get informed of by someone in Colorado. WrestleTick's only reporting a distribution of 2,527 tickets. Not a very strong advance for this show. And looking ahead, outside of the Forbidden Door show, like, they have no shows coming up that are currently at the 3,000 ticket level. Now, some of those might hit that mark. We do have weeks to go, but I think their strongest, looking at them now, is that Saddle Dome show in Calgary. That's around 2,600. So, I mean, there are some very low ticket numbers, and it's across the board coming up over this next month or so. So it's a continual problem just selling tickets for these shows.
You find it interesting that for this particular edition of Dynamite, they didn't announce more than they typically do. How many things were even announced beforehand?
To me, the key was MJF returning, but obviously that did not spark. That was not enough to spark, because you did have a week to promote MJF's return and being on the show for a segment. You did set up a title match on a couple of days' notice.
A title match that I think anybody bought.
I thought that was it was a very good match, but never when I was watching this match tonight did this feel like a world title match. And I think that's I don't think you ever want to put your world title out there where it doesn't feel. It's not as though they just put this title out, you know, every other week to be defended. But we will get into that more so. But I mean, you could certainly look at last week, the fact they did not advertise Mercedes Moné wrestling and defending the title, which was also it was the reveal of Sky Blue and the blow off to that whole attack angle. Many people brought up the fact that you were in Inglewood, California, and you had Mystico on the show, and that's a market he might have made a difference in, but given the parameters of that gauntlet, they couldn't advertise him in advance either. And I mean, coming out of tonight's show, if you were someone that was thinking of, like, you had no matches announced for Collision tonight, and I mean,
a match on Rampage with Mina Shirakawa.
Well, but that's being taped tonight, so yeah. you're not really selling anyone on that other than tuning in. They do have a pretty big match for next week in Ospreay and Rey Fénix. Like, that's a pretty great match to promote a week out. It's a bigger issue that they are having. But
I only ask because I wonder if it would have made that much of a difference to ticket sales if they did what they usually do and essentially announce the entire show beforehand. Because actually, for my enjoyment of the show today, I actually like the fact that a lot of things were kept as a surprise. You know, they felt a lot more novel and exciting learning about these matches in the moment, especially with a roster as deep as what they have right now.
Yeah, well, so going into it, unless I had missed something like an hour or so before, which I don't think I did, we had the world title match. We had the eight man with Wheeler Yuta's return and Saraya and Mariah May. I think that was it. This whole the four way, that was unannounced.
Yeah.
The Mark Briscoe match was unannounced.
It doesn't matter essentially if they announced it an hour beforehand. We're talking about the afternoon, you know.
And right.
By this afternoon, they had four things announced, one of them being the MJF return.
Yes, where we didn't know what we were going to get with MJF. Would they hotshot a match here with Rouge? But it looks like they are holding off on that. So MJF is the person to kick off the show, and he comes out to a very big response and chants of "He's our scumbag," and he went back to Paul Heyman at One Night Stand, where he said if his eyes are bloodshot, it's because we're here in Colorado. So he's high for this promo. That's what we are of the understanding, and he's here to put everyone on notice. And plugs Forbidden Door as the pay-per-view in Long Island where he'll probably wrestle some random Japanese or Mexican guy. Hell of a sales job for this show coming up. And
I mean, it's in line with his character, though, to look down on any other promotion other than the WWE.
Well, he says that while he was gone, there were some children making bold claims, and he goes one by one. First, Kazuchika Okada, who he runs down Okada's physique. Then Swerve, who, if he went to business school, he missed the public speaking course while going there. Then talks about Ospreay's speech, and the crowd was not going to have any of this, and they all chanted bruv. They weren't having Okada or Swerve's back, but they certainly did have Ospreay's. And then he goes off to list all the different people that he's beaten that Will Ospreay is not at the level of, including Cody Rhodes, Samoa Joe, Bryan Danielson, and says MJF is the best in the world, and he became the face of AEW in 5 short years. People are out here trying to revise my history while I've been gone, and before he can continue the promo, Roosh interrupts, and he comes out, and he insults all of the Americans and states, "While MJF has been gone, I've been busy working. Where is my moment?" I was like, how busy has Roosh been? I was legitimately curious. This man had his first match in AEW on April 27th this year. Since that time, this Iron Man has had 3 matches in AEW this year. They have all come since April 27th. He has not been busy working. His moment, he can take a number, okay? There are plenty of more deserving people in this company for moments than Roosh, okay? This man has not been in a Roosh to get to the front of the line anywhere. I could not believe, I knew this guy is barely on television. You made the joke. We always get these new videos. He's always coming back, but he never gets here.
Maybe he was getting really busy preparing for those videos, preparing for this particular speech. You know, who knows what he actually determines hard work.
Okay. By the way, number of matches on Dynamite this year? 0. Okay. Mm. That's why I thought he was going to break the streak here with MJF, but they did not. He does this whole promo and MJF just blows it off, says, "I didn't understand any of that." And said that this place was bad when that Mark Tony Khan was running it, but it's even worse now with the Elite. And he acknowledges once paying Roosh a lot of money to take out Bryan Danielson, and says he does respect Roosh and knows that he comes from a long line of wrestlers, his father, La Bestia del Ring, and says some might call you a Nepo baby. Not me, but some would. And then MJF looks like he too was doing some learning of multiple languages a la Matt Jackson, and introduced us to his Spanish, as Roosh has heard enough. He is not going to hear his name insulted in his native tongue. And he runs out
something mentioning his mother as well.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. About being dry of some sort. No, that was his wife. That was his wife, I think he was talking about.
I think the general women that Roosh has been with. Yeah.
Okay.
That was that insult. Yeah.
They brawled and they separated the two. So match could be coming, or Roosh. I don't know if Roosh would qualify as the random Mexican guy to face at Forbidden
Door. Doesn't he have, does he still have AAA affiliation?
Not really.
Okay. So he wouldn't be disqualified from taking part?
I don't think so. Need kind of a whole decoder.
We'll wait for Rod Viper to comment in the YouTube section. I thought a good segment overall. I was actually impressed by Roosh here. You know, again, this is a tough segment for anybody to step into to oppose arguably the best speaker in the industry, much less for somebody who is relatively new to English promos. But I thought Roosh overall conveyed like good presence, good confidence, said his words with conviction and charisma, and that was enough for me to like pay attention to him. And I hope it means that they're going to give him more opportunities like this to speak publicly. MJF set up several big programs for himself here, you know, took aim at kind of like the bigwigs that have sort of ascended or entered the company since he's been away. I thought his insults against Swerve and Okada in particular, though, were pretty weak for my standards of MJF. So he insulted Swerve's body? And he insulted
Okada's body and Swerve's mic skills.
Promobility, which are two things that no one has ever criticized of either of them, whether you're a fan or a detractor of either wrestler. Like, it's one thing for a heel to make those insults, but I think for an MJF as a babyface, I think you need a bit more truth. You need a bit more sort of like validity in the criticisms, lest you come across a bit heelish. And I guess things are always kind of blurred with MJF, but I felt like there were still things that you could have valid sort of criticisms of, whether it be Swerve or Okada. With Ospreay, I thought he had some pretty good lines that were just kind of generic, like, in the best way, like type of trash talk in claiming that I'm the best in the world and you're not. So that almost seems to me like it's the big program that, you know, the fact that he mentioned Ospreay last, or maybe it's just a recognition that like the world does consider Ospreay the best in the world above even a Swerve or an Okada.
Yeah. And it's worth noting, Will Ospreay was not at the show tonight, and they did make a point of Swerve responding to this. So it wasn't just the, you know, the babyface ignores the insult. They did acknowledge this later, and no Okada on the show either. So that takes us to Trent Barretta coming. Oh, sorry. First, we go to a video of Roderick Strong, who is training and scaling the mountains with Mike Bennett and Matt Taven, as he states that the sun is setting on Swerve and he is a wrestling legend, and says, "Fellas, it's go time."
Mm-hmm. It's a good bit of production. You know, a lot of really slick looking, nice video packages on today's show.
There were some very good video packages on this. I could not take Roderick Strong seriously in this challenges role, but we're talking about a TV match as well. And they did what they could. This was not the most excessive build for a title match.
It was it's a 5-day build. And how did he actually get the match?
I was supposed to be the next entrant in the match.
Yeah.
I should get the title match. And Tony Khan thought this was a great idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Orange Cassidy, Kyle O'Reilly, Jay Lethal, and Rey Fénix in the Woo Energy match of the night. This should have been a drink off, okay? They all had to drink this energy drink and digest it. First one to spit up, eliminated.
That sounds like a KOPW stipulation for the future.
The winner of this match will get an international title match against Will Ospreay next week. And Lethal teased a dive early on. Instead, he just did a strut. All four go down after head kicks by O'Reilly and Fénix to one another. Dutt knocks Orange Cassidy off balance from the turnbuckle. And then there's a stun dog onto Jay Lethal. Tries for another one to Kyle O'Reilly, but he has this scouted. So he turns the stun dog into an armbar. I'm waiting to see this. Maybe Kevin Holland will try that one in his next fight. And Fénix splashes Kyle to break up this armbar, and they were worried that Fénix's arm might have snapped in this whole thing as Kyle is splashed while Fénix is in the armbar. Lethal then comes off the top with an elbow drop. All four are down again. Cassidy hit this insane satellite DDT to Rey Fénix. They just kept spinning and spinning. Orange punch is delivered to Kyle, and then Lethal hits a dragon screw to Fénix. So Fénix is selling his knee while Lethal follows with a lethal combination to Cassidy, a lethal injection onto O'Reilly, and then with Fénix selling the knee, Lethal goes for the figure four, and he counters it with an inside cradle to catch Jay Lethal at 9:28. I thought like a pretty strong four-way that these two had, and sets up Will Ospreay and Rey Fénix for next week's edition of Dynamite,
which should be amazing. Yeah, this was a great match. I thought, you know, just outstanding four-way sequences. All four of these guys are so fast, so technically perfect. And this was an instance where I actually felt like the sort of lack of announcements beforehand was like added to sort of my excitement of the match. It kind of had a similar feeling to what the Casino Gauntlet provided, in that you didn't know who was going to come out next. And when you see the collection of all four of these guys together, you're like, wow, this is a really incredible roster. So I actually was almost like, you know, more excited for this, finding about it in the moment, sort of like a mystery vortex. And it just kind of shows you like the depth of this roster right now when they can do something like this. Like, you almost have to, like, you can hit the randomizer and the match you're going to get coming out of it, it should probably be a really amazing one, because everybody on this roster for the most part is really, really, really talented.
Yeah, everyone shined in this in different ways. You had the flying of Fénix. You had the submission amalgamations with Kyle O'Reilly. Orange Cassidy, that's always going to be great in the underdog babyface role. And Jay Lethal was just the glue of this thing. I was really impressed with him in this match. It was just a really entertaining four-way that they structured very effectively for the 9.5 minutes that they went here. And there's going to be exceedingly high expectations for a Rey Fénix Will Ospreay match next week. Trent Barretta comes out with Don Callis, and Callis hands Trent a chair. So Cassidy grabs a chain and wraps it around his fist. But Chris Statlander comes out. She's pleading to Orange Cassidy not to attack him. and Stokely Hathaway is out, telling Cassidy not to underestimate Chris Statlander, who proceeds to drill Cassidy with a punch. And Orange Cassidy is just looking at her. So Willow Nightingale comes down and Statlander runs off with Stokely Hathaway on her back. This was the equivalent of Otis carrying out Maxine and Tozawa, was Chris Statlander carrying out Stokely Hathaway on her back.
Fun gimmick, yeah. I wondered if this might be a tease of an intergender match.
I certainly had that feeling of them, like they have really not gone down that path. They've made some teases towards it in the past, but you were led to believe
it. We had the match on the Jericho Cruise, which I don't know if it aired on TV proper. It might have been a dark.
Aaron. And they did, and yeah, I think it aired on. It aired on dark. I want to say. But not on AEW proper on television. But yeah, you were left here to believe that Orange Cassidy can't fight back against Statlander. At the very least, it would seem like we're going to get Willow and Orange together. Mm-hmm. But Orange and Chris Statlander seems to be a potential direction that they could go and explore that.
They could do intergender like WWE style, where like the men and women can't interact, or at least the men can't hit the woman. So it seems like they might be building to that.
Chris Jericho arrives at the arena with Big Bill and Brian Keith. And this began a show-long series of segments involving Jericho and the Learning Tree as Jericho went to give his advice. If Jericho has been a like 7 to an 8 on this scale of 1 to 10, he dialed it up to 20, and it's... The design is that you are so aggravated. So I want to say mission accomplished, because these were so over the top and just you dread it every time they cut back to them throughout this evening. I will say Brian Keith, I thought was great.
The best part.
Brian Keith has already found in this one night. Yeah. I think he's done his best character work to date in this company by a landslide. So it's just Jericho giving advice to the driver, then critiques the cameraman for his shakiness as Jericho is trying to give him advice.
It all follows, like, he'll say something about how, like, he's been driving for many years and therefore he's, experienced enough to give advice. And he claimed this for being in television long enough that he knows how to operate a camera as well. So he gave the camera person advice. And he's doing it all in this sort of, like, you know, volume 12, you know, monotonous tone that is incredibly aggravating by design. I was actually enjoying a lot of this, you know, Learning Tree stuff with Jericho in the weeks prior. This seemed to take a turn where it was exceedingly hard to watch. And I wonder if like that was the intent.
I think the idea is, like, this is a comedian that's getting on stage to purposely bomb. And you can say, wow, that's really daring and bold. But ultimately, it's are you compelled by this? Do you want to watch this? And I just thought that this, I don't know, it's not connecting with me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, like, a lot of these sort of, like, risks that are taken could be first weeks where everybody's sort of complaining, and then we could totally turn around and say, wow, this was like, you know, rough beginnings, but like we get it now, like it makes sense. What would we be saying?
And there are
this?
Times he that like this Jericho character, we can't say like these have all been misses. Like there he has had some weeks where it's worked, and a positive segment sometimes does override the negative ones, but like tonight I just, beyond like the silver lining that I did think like Brian Keith did shine in some of these segments.
Yeah, definitely. I love that Keith sort of has his own thing. I mean, we have Big Bill that is essentially sort of like does the same thing as Jericho, sort of like an overly nice, almost like obnoxiously overly nice and kind of self-unaware, positive speaking person. And Brian Keith is just like same attitude, just like he's there to basically make sure that everybody respects Chris Jericho in an almost like sort of grotesque way, but so entertaining. So he's perfect. But I mean, the others are definitely getting to go away territory.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People vs. GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair-Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Renee interviewed Willow Nightingale, and she notes losing at Double or Nothing and congratulates Monet, but one day there will be a score to settle, and states that I did have Mercedes' shoulders pinned at the pay-per-view. She never trusted Stokely Hathaway to begin with, but she trusted Statlander with her life and warns Chris that she doesn't know just how dangerous she can be, as Cassidy walks by and gives her a fist tap.
Yeah, yeah. Which is about as much of a thank you as I think you're going to get from Orange Cassidy. Along with, I'm sure, a lot of people might have had some concerns that without the TBS championship serving as like an excuse to put Willow on TV, that she would get lost without a storyline. I mean, with the Statlander turn, obviously, in this sort of segment, it does give you hope that she will remain a consistent presence throughout Dynamite. I think, you know, the turn and losing the championship has allowed Willow a chance now to show a different side of her character. We saw like celebratory, happy Willow as champion. Now we're going to get to see pissed off Willow, which I'm actually quite excited for.
Christopher Daniels comes out, the interim EVP.
Mm-hmm.
That's here to serve a role, I guess.
Even though
I don't quite understand his role when we do have Tony Khan making matches on Collision.
Yeah. Well, he's there to make the formal announcements. Now, you can still barge your way in to see Tony Khan if you wanted to. But the guy who's going to step out in front of the stage to deliver the announcements will be Chris Daniels, I guess.
Why do the Young Bucks now have all... Why do they still have all of this control? Like, Tony Khan is back in story.
Well, aren't they EVPs who always had that level of control?
Well, they weren't running the show until they took out Tony Khan.
They
explain Tony Khan overrides everyone. And then there's the EVPs.
Right.
But the Bucks are still running this as though they had injured Tony and sent him back to Jacksonville. But we know he's back.
Sure. That's a very good question. I don't really have the answer to.
And this guy, I don't know what he serves here. So this guy is just like lower on the totem pole. And he comes out to talk about the ladder match at Forbidden Door for the vacant TNT title. And we're going to have another qualifying match tonight. And they reveal Mark Briscoe and Brian Cage for the next qualifier. And Mark Briscoe brings out a chair, which Paul Turner catches and discards, and the crowd boos this. And Brian Cage takes over after a clothesline on the floor, busts open Briscoe's mouth, and they mention that with Mark Briscoe being the ROH champion, Brian Cage winning could put him in a good position for Death Before Dishonor in July. I'm sure that's at the front of Brian Cage's mind, is what this could do for him. Not just getting into the ladder match, but I could also get a title match at Death Before Dishonor at the Esports Arena in Arlington, Texas.
Oh, who wants to be? Who doesn't want to be a part of those Texas shows?
Well, you can go. You can go find out more about these Texas shows from Brendan Thurston and what he uncovered today on Pollock and Thurston. Mm. So he's beating down on Briscoe. We see Don Callis and Konosuke Takeshita scouting from the stands, as Takeshita has already qualified. And then Jack Perry is watching backstage. Now, I had thought they had just bypassed and put Jack Perry into the ladder match, but he has to win a qualifier. He's not technically in the match yet. Mark brings out multiple chairs, and it leads to him leaping off one to dive onto Cage on the floor. And then Cage comes back, spinning Liger Bomb. Briscoe kicks out, and he makes his comeback with a Death Valley driver and Froggy Bow to win in 10 minutes and 16 seconds. A landmark victory as a ROH title holder won on an AEW program, which almost never happens. So
does that not usually happen with the ROH champion?
I mean, I'm used to Kyle Fletcher typically losing on these shows, but we got Mark Briscoe winning, and he enters the ladder match. So we have Mark Briscoe, Takeshita, and I would think it's Jack Perry for sure will also be in this ladder match.
Well, you got to wait for Mark Briscoe to lose on AEW TV, which I think will be happening during this ladder match. Yeah, I thought it was a good match. You know, Briscoe's charisma and ability to draw a crowd to his side is, like, I think among the best in this entire company. From the moment he's out there, despite not even getting consistent TV time, he always has the crowd's love. And Cage, too, I think, like, how I would describe him at this point in AEW is dependable, consistent, you know. But do you ever take him seriously as a challenger? At this point, not really, because he's lost so much, you know. Like, even before the match begins, you kind of know the outcome. And every company needs guys like that. But I would maybe suggest Brian Cage is somebody who probably has potential beyond just playing that sort of role.
Yeah, when you go through the drop-down menu of attributes, and dependable is at the top of them, you realize there's a ceiling.
He's
always here on time. Man's never late. Jack Perry is sarcastically applauding Mark Briscoe's victory and says it won't matter because no one is willing to sacrifice as much as me. I can't be stopped. The universe has already chosen Jack Perry, and I will be the next TNT champion.
See the video of him driving the scapegoat van on the highway that a fan caught?
Yeah, this trumps any this trumps Tim Sylvia wearing his UFC championship to like the grocery store, or a guy that has to carry around that Money in the Bank briefcase. This dude's driving around the scapegoat bus.
Oh, I love it. I mean, it's a free ride, you know. Like, you think these guys might have to pay for their own rentals?
Oh, I'd be expensing the mileage. I'd just be going on a constant road trip.
I'd live in it. Are you kidding me? Save on that hotel as well.
Maybe he's just going to go Collision exclusive in July. Park this thing in Arlington and just camp out in the scapegoat bus all month.
Sounds like a plan. Yeah, why
taking
not?
Death before dishonor. Renee is with Samoa Joe and Hook, and Renee asks if Joe is now considered Hook's mentor, and Joe says, "Well, I wouldn't say that." And then in walk two newcomers, Tony Nese and Aria Davari. You familiar with these two?
I think I might have heard of them, yeah. Some sort of high school athletes. Oh, sorry, varsity athletes, yes.
They insult Hook by stating, "You don't have your dad to protect you anymore, so now you've got Joe to protect you." And Hook just wants to throw down immediately, but Joe calms him and says, "We'll handle them on our time," because they know they would be protected by all this security around here. So Joe is the voice of reason for Hook.
He's the voice of reason. He's also the voice of, like, not engaging. And somehow I just feel like all of this is going to end with Joe turning on poor Hook. Joe just has that, like, super villain thing about him where it just feels really tough to trust the guy. But I hope it's not very soon yet, because I'm kind of enjoying this team together. I can't say, like, you know, a varsity athlete's feud is all that inspiring.
Talking about?
It immediately just kind of, like, they have the stench of just, like, being a team that you don't take seriously. It's not necessarily that exciting, but this is a chance for them to perhaps build some interest through these sort of dynamite appearances if they have more than this.
Jericho and company run into Matt Menard and Angelo Parker. Two of my branches, Jericho notes, and that their professional and personal lives are better because of me. He gives some tips to Matt Menard for commentary on Rampage, as Menard has now permanently replaced Jericho. And for Angelo Parker, he states, "I'm an 8-time champion and a 3-time parent," and gives some parenting advice to Angelo Parker. And then
the champion first, followed by the...
Yeah, the champion. Parent is secondary. Yeah. And as he walks off, Brian Keith with the line of the night to Parker, "You make sure that baby respects Chris Jericho." And I thought, okay, that was not quite worth the amount of spots we had here with Jericho and company, but that was a very funny line.
It's a hilarious one-liner. Like, he delivers it with so much conviction.
Does Matt Menard not have the wrestler fit?
Yes, he does.
More than this.
Yeah, where do you find a baby blue tracksuit like that?
Goodwill.
Goodwill. Good luck.
Okay.
They're not selling this at Goodwill.
The fanny pack definitely got definitely Goodwill.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, it's vintage too. The Acclaim come out and they start a rap about the Young Bucks, calling them extremely vague perverts. EVPs. And the Young Bucks cut their mics on the screen and mention in the employee handbook you cannot disparage any EVPs. Unless it's at a press conference.
Yeah, I was gonna say, since when was that written in?
Well, I want to see the independent contractor's handbook. That might be a bit different. Mm-hmm. And they cut them from the show and kicked them out of the arena to chant a bullshit. My question was, what were they about to do? Was there a match? Were there people waiting to come out? And if there was a team waiting to come out, do they get a title shot because they were in the gorilla position ready to have this match? Like Roderick Strong.
All very good questions, yes.
Renee interviews Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana, who welcomes back MJF, you little bitch, and he will deal with him after mentioning his name tonight. And he's got a contract for the match with Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door that he gives to Prince Nana, who is in charge of sending it to Will Ospreay in England, which sounds like a FedEx that is could be done in person next week, could it not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the rush?
I don't know, but is Prince Nana going to screw this up somehow?
How about an e-signature? What are you suggesting, John, that they're not going to deliver on this match?
I'm stating that in my brain of watching plenty of WWE, that you could have Will Ospreay win this match and somehow the contract was not properly executed, that Prince Nana screwed up of some sort. Maybe he signed something.
Right. So you're saying like a dusty finish, like via
contract? I don't even tampering? Want to say this out loud because it would be an awful idea.
Mm, yeah.
But I mean, he did give the contract here to Prince Nana.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we're supposed to look that deep into it. Maybe we are.
Then why mention it?
Why bring the contract here at all?
I mean, we've got all these weeks.
Somebody
has
to send it.
Is this the first time ever a contract has been like mailed out to somebody as opposed to designing a whole segment around two men signing a piece of paper in front of the world?
You know, I you're more of a historian than I am. So.
Well, Swerve, in regards to Strong and his mountain climbing, Swerve says he is the mountain of professional wrestling. I won't just knock Roderick off. I'm going to bury him under it. And this could also be setting up a future Darby Allin match. But who is the true mountain of professional wrestling? Who is going to climb that mountain?
It writes itself, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said he was rooting for Team AEW at Double or Nothing, but next time, you shouldn't forget about the AEW champion. So he's a little disrespected that he wasn't recruited to be part of Anarchy in the Arena.
Sorry, I don't know if I'm the only one hearing John transform into a transformer with his voice right now. Can you speak one more time?
I don't know. Do I sound okay?
You sound like a Kylo Ren right now, at least to me. I don't know if that's I think the chat room is having that issue as well. Is there something on your mic that we could reset or something?
I don't know how I can change my voice from sounding like this.
No. It's your mic that's the issue.
I don't know.
There we go. I don't know what you did, but you fixed it.
I changed the volume, okay?
Okay, there we go. When you listen back, you'll know what I mean.
Okay, well, I'm curious now. There's a QR code for Mercedes Moné, which takes us to her promo, to give us a password to sign up for something.
Yeah, all like afternoon they were promoting this thing called Follow the Moné, which is their QR code thing that they're trying out, and
basically to get all your personal information.
I guess so. And it's just like a contest?
They don't even mention what you could win. Like, why would you submit to this mystery?
Well, it's so they could make money, of course.
Follow the money, like hand over the money to us. Like, what do I, the consumer, get out of this?
So it's not really quite as cool as, you know, like what even they're doing right now with the Uncle Howdy stuff. certainly not the Bray Wyatt stuff that we've grown accustomed to when it comes to QR codes that we're supposed to find on wrestling TV. This just takes us to, like, you know, some sort of shitty contest. Like, what are we even supposed to win?
That's what I'm asking. Like, what is my reason?
So here's the text, okay? You're ready to follow the Monet. Watch an exclusive message from Mercedes Monet below to get this week's top secret password. Then head to X and post as the boss is instructed to begin your journey. This week's secret password is hired. Remember, this is for VIPs only, so don't post it. But you'll need it if you want a shot at those prizes. Oops, sorry. So what prizes, though? What prizes are we talking about?
I have no
idea. Okay, well... we'll find out.
I have no idea. Well, there are a bunch of people that are tweeting with the hashtag follow the money entry. I guess you're to write why you love Mercedes of some sort.
It doesn't give you a whole lot. Now, we should listen to the promo.
You are here on week one, which tells me you know how to hustle. That's real CEO material. You are one of the real ones, and I want you with me every step of the way. So click the link below and head over to X to tell me why you're here to hashtag follow the money. Because I am looking to reward my moneymakers. Last thing before I end this meeting, this week's secret password is hired.
Okay, so even in the video, she doesn't tell you what the reward is. Now, people in the chat room are saying you get to meet her if you win.
That's not implied here.
I mean, maybe they announce it somewhere else. I don't know. This is a bigger mystery than the Uncle Howdy thing.
Enter and then you can find out. Well, if you go to follow the money, there's a bunch of people entering this. So please keep us posted, folks.
Oh, anything with her, people are going to enter. Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay.
I meant contest-wise, yes.
And then they make it official. Mercedes and Stephanie Vaquer, title versus title at Forbidden Door, which takes us into a video of Mercedes and her love of Japanese wrestling. There were a bunch of old New Japan clips and then talking about the female Japanese wrestlers that she idolized and how the Strong Women's Championship was made for her last year. And set this up well. This was another, as Wei mentioned, there were some very good video packages on this show, and this was another one of them.
I thought this was a really excellently produced video, and Monet did a great job delivering these lines. This, like, was certainly one of her better AEW on-screen appearances. You know, it conveyed her love of Japanese wrestling and why it's important for her to wrestle on a New Japan-themed show. It tells you the significance of the New Japan Strong title and the fact that it was created for her, but due to circumstances that just, you know, didn't happen as they wanted. And it told you the result of the first match between Vaquer and Monet. So it told you everything you needed to know about this backstory in a very short amount of time.
Maybe this is what the winner will get. Maybe Stephanie Vaquer should have had to enter this contest, get this title shot. Get a pay-per-view match with Mercedes. Kidding?
She just had to walk out. That's all she had to do.
John Moxley, Brian Danielson, Claudio Castagnoli, and the returning Wheeler Yuta against Magnus, Rojito, Volador Jr., and Esfinge. Yuta's first match since January the 10th, and they put a lot of focus on him in the match. All eight men start fighting at the bell, and they mention that this is Brian Danielson's first match since Anarchy at the Arena, which was 10 days ago, and they note, the first time he was in Anarchy in the Arena, it nearly ended his career. Not mentioned was that Claudio, what a negative Nancy. He worried over nothing. Remember?
Well, yeah.
I'll follow him anywhere around the world and support him, but not Anarchy in the Arena. I cannot support this. Guy was fine.
Well, we know, like, Danielson, so this goes back to, like, the Ospreay Tiger Driver thing, right? Like, they just kind of have Danielson show up after these things without really kind of telling us what sort of injury he's been suffering. Now, he did come out with, like, his neck heavily bandaged. Maybe eventually he'll kind of explain, I've been hiding all of these serious injuries. You know, the Ospreay Tiger Driver did a number on me. Anarchy in the Arena did a number on me. It's going to cut my last few days of my full-time career that much shorter. Like, I'm waiting for that sort of promo. But if they don't give us that sort of promo, then yeah, it's very valid to maybe criticize a lot of that.
Moxley and Danielson execute a heart attack onto Magnus, and then Yuta comes off with a splash. The BCC isolate Magnus and just beat the piss out of him. Esfinge gets the tag and lands several backbreakers and these two huge monkey flips onto Claudio. I just want to see Claudio working with, like, guys that are 150 pounds and under. I am waiting for this Claudio Leo Rush match. That should just put them on Rampage.
Division,
Giant Swing is hit onto Magnus, and then Volador is in, rotates into a Code Red. Danielson attacks with kicks, and then this incredible tilt-a-whirl onto Claudio. Volador is hit with the Busaiku knee. That takes him out, and Yuta is left with Rujito with an Olympic slam into the seatbelt, and Yuta gets the win in 11 minutes and 58 seconds as BCC triumph at full strength. Sorry, Matt Sydal.
No. Is it really full strength without Matt Sydal?
He's watching in the back. He's nodding his head in approval. Gotcha. Yeah. Or he's just shaking it in disappointment that Yuta's back.
This was, I think, a very good match. You know, it felt like a nice little treat to see the BCC at full strength taking on a bunch of luchadors here. I expected something to be announced maybe for Forbidden Door involving CMLL, but we didn't really get that here. It's always like interesting to me to see like how the BCC meshed that particular style with luchadors, and it surprisingly works incredibly well. So we'll see what these guys got for Forbidden Door.
My thought would be Moxley is probably in a big match at Forbidden Door, and you can't do anything until after this Evil match on Sunday. So I would think the IWGP angle, they could shoot an angle this Sunday. You could set something up at Dominion, or at least by next Wednesday, I would think you get Moxley's program set.
Would you have expected a bit more mention of that? Did Excalibur mention that
match
at all?
They didn't plug Dominion at all on the show, or Moxley's defense against Evil. Jericho enters catering and literally gave a guy tips on how to serve himself at the table.
Yeah. Again, maybe the intention here is to just like beat you over the head so much with this throughout the show that you're supposed to be complaining about this as the biggest thing on the show. Yeah.
Then we had this video on Daniel Garcia with his whole story of coming up, training at Grapplers Anonymous when he was a young 17, 18-year-old, driving 12 hours for no money, getting into the car wreck a number of years ago where he broke both of his legs, unsure if he would walk or wrestle again, but says he was grateful for that moment. And they show him in his wheelchair, surrounded by his training partners at Grapplers Anonymous, and making his AEW on-screen debut. There is Brandon Thurston, standing right next to Daniel Garcia in this photo. And Garcia says he doesn't take anything for granted, and he wants that shot at Will Ospreay's international title, and no one can outwork him. If ever there was a video package to catapult someone to the top of the rankings, this was it. This was one of the best things on the show, easily.
Really, really excellent. Absolutely. Like, almost so good that I hope it doesn't just result in a single match thing for Garcia.
Coming up on Collision next week, it's Will Ospreay against Daniel Garcia.
Yeah, like, I don't expect Garcia to beat Ospreay for the championship, but I at least hope for a sustained push for Daniel Garcia, you know, and sustained presence on a Dynamite or a Collision for Garcia. Like, you could only tell these stories so many times, and this isn't even the first time he's told the story, to my recollection, like on AEW TV. You can only use and create this level of sympathy so much by mentioning that car accident. And I hope they don't waste it on just like a, you know, one match thing.
Well, I'm thinking that this is June 26th, they're in Buffalo for a Dynamite and Collision taping. Unfortunately, it's the Dynamite and Collision right before Forbidden Door. So you could, like, that would be the time to do it, but it's kind of like setting up Ospreay challenging for the title that weekend against Swerve. But you could also do something where
belts off of Ospreay.
You could take the international title off of him, and I don't think it'd be the worst idea in the world.
Although even, have Ospreay lose right before
the timing is off. That would be what I'd be looking at, since that's only a couple of weeks away.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more, going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People versus GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
The Acclaimed confront the Young Bucks, and Anthony Bowens warns them that eventually you'll have to come face-to-face with us soon enough. They were actually speaking face-to-face, but I guess at a future date they'll also be face-to-face. The Young Bucks meet with Christian and the Patriarchy. Christian wants another title shot, and they're like, guys, these title shots, we don't give them out like candy around here. And Christian explains he carried this company for the past year. He deserves to have gold. If it was up to the Young Bucks, every single one of them would have titles, which there are more than enough to go around in this company if they so chose.
Mother Wayne could have a championship.
She could have multiples. They promise to make the Patriarchy happy, and the two sides will continue to help one another, as Taz calls them a dangerous alliance before he realizes that name has been taken in wrestling history and just called them a dangerous group, which sounds very ominous.
Doesn't have quite as good of a ring to it.
No.
A dangerous group, yeah.
Mariah May against Saraya with Tony Storm on commentary and Harley Cameron and Zack Knight in the corner. May is dressed up as the outcast version of Tony Storm.
Hmm.
So there was a long spinning side slam by Mariah May, but then Saraya runs around the ring, evading her until May ducks a clothesline from Cameron into a super kick by Saraya, who proceeds to throw May over and over into the barricade as Tony is very concerned on commentary. Then we have May landing a headbutt and a running elbow strike, hits a handstand Rana off the turnbuckle, and then Saraya, who desperately needs just an updated set of move names because all of them are tied to Paige, and I don't know what to call these. She hits her with the Rampage, and this thing looked nuts, and the whole crowd reacted to this. This was a big near fall, and the crowd picked up here and then applies the PTO, the Paige tap out, and May submits to this in 9 minutes and 6 seconds.
Yeah. I actually enjoyed the match. I thought May looked very good here, as she has, I think, throughout her entire AEW run in these singles matches.
There's a consistent thread in these Mariah May matches.
Yeah, she is very good. And I thought Saraya looked very good as well. Very charismatic as a heel, as usual. A rare Saraya match. It was maybe worth the wait, some would say, for the week. Yes.
Her and Roosh, okay? They've been busy. While everyone else is talking, they've been busy. Storm dives into the ring, checking on Mariah May as Saraya and Cameron attack both. Zack is holding Luther away as Mina Shirakawa runs down, fights off Saraya and Cameron with spinning back fists, and she goes to check on Mariah and gets into Tony Storm's face, and May has to play peacemaker, and the graphic appears confirming their match for Forbidden Door and position this that it could be Tony Storm's biggest threat yet to her championship, as both are trying to appeal to Mariah May, who is probably going to have to make a decision soon.
Yeah, a feud centered around bosoms, it seems here. So
yes, Tony Storm is now called this AEW Where the Breasts Wrestle.
It's been a somewhat bizarre feud.
Fifth grade John Pollock would have been really amused by that one.
It's been a somewhat like bizarrely built feud for a something that shouldn't have been all that bizarrely built up. It's relatively simple. It's Mariah May with her former stablemate about to take on her former stablemate taking on her present stablemate in Mina Shirakawa and Tony Storm. But because we had such sporadic appearances from Mina Shirakawa that really were not explained significantly whatsoever, nor did you have the interaction between Storm and Shirakawa until I believe this point, it's all kind of felt very tough to keep up with. I hope this means Shirakawa is a bit more of a constant presence on Dynamite in these weeks leading up to Forbidden Door. So hopefully we get a bit more of a cohesive background, character building, storyline, whatever you want to call it, between these two. But as a match itself, I'm very much looking forward to it. I think Shirakawa is somebody who has a lot of potential for crossover appeal. You know, she, I watched her Hey EW episode with RJ City. It was hilarious. Apparently she's got an English literature degree that she has completely forgotten about. Like he did a test. He tested her.
She forgot about this?
She forgot everything she learned, apparently. Like, so what, I don't know. Like, would you have remembered anything from English Lit if you studied those courses? I don't think I would have.
I feel if my degree was in English literature, I'd remember that part of my life.
Maybe you'd be right. Yeah. But maybe she lied on her resume. Who knows? But she, you know, she can speak the language fluently enough to be able to tell these sort of stories. I think she obviously has a lot of natural charisma in segments like these. So I hope this is a program that gets a bit more airtime leading up to Forbidden Door. And I hope she even sticks around beyond that.
This guy on the far left, I mean, he was so happy that this match has been made for Forbidden Door.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Jericho stops by Private Party.
They also screwed up the announcement, by the way. They flashed the lower third during the match. Oh, and then oops. Tony had to say, oh, it's just been confirmed.
I missed that. Wow. Graphics are sometimes tough to time.
Blame the Elite. Yeah.
Jericho tells Private Party that they should open things up and make themselves Public Party. Isaiah says, you don't quite fit our dynamic, and Brian Keith is pissed about this. And to give them more time on Dynamite, they invite Private Party to be on TV time next week. So another announcement to go up against the NBA Finals next week. Brian Danielson does a promo calling this a blessing, having Yuta back and win it for the team. He said that this final year of his full-time career was supposed to be epic, but it hasn't been what I've wanted. I lost a TNT title match to Christian. I didn't win the Continental Classic. I lost to Okada at the Tokyo Dome. I keep losing all these big matches. But the straw that broke the camel's back was losing at Anarchy in the Arena. He said, my last year as a full-time wrestler is not done yet, and declares himself for the Owen Hart Cup to go and headline Wembley Stadium. This might be my last shot, but it's going to be my best shot, and I'm going out on top.
Really, really strong promo from Danielson here. You know, the fact that he's got sort of this looming semi-retirement hanging above him has added a whole lot of weight to any sort of promos that he cuts where he mentions it. So framing the Owen Hart Cup as like his potential last chance at a main event or at a title shot, I think automatically makes Danielson one of the front runners, no matter who else is in this tournament with him, for potentially headlining All In at Wembley. Like, I mean, because he's only entering semi-retirement, like, I don't think you can promote a retirement match, but you can promote, like, this is
a semi-retirement match.
Semi-retirement match.
If he loses, he's got to work another year full-time.
Hasn't every wrestling retirement match been a semi-retirement match, technically?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. But a great promo from Danielson and tells you that maybe the caliber of talent you should expect for the Owen Hart Cup.
All that was announced for Rampage is Serena Deeb and Mina Shirakawa, so they're taping that now. Could go the full hour based on this announcement. And the main event is Swerve Strickland, Roderick Strong for the AEW title. So Swerve is going after the knee, and Taven interrupts a Swerve stomp as Strong capitalizes, hitting a backbreaker onto the top turnbuckle. But then Swerve sends him into the post from the floor, and Swerve connects with a rolling flatliner. Powerbomb is set up into a power slam, and Strong avoids the house call, yanks Swerve off the apron, and this was a mess as Bennett and Taven were supposed to catch him, and then Strong lifts him up and drops him onto the edge. And then we see a rolling flatliner countered by a codebreaker from Strong, Olympic slam, tiger driver, and a sick kick, all of which Swerve kicks out from. And then there is a slingshot into a Swerve stomp coming down onto the floor. Swerve gets the crowd going, tries for a house call. Again, Strong gets out of the way, but then he catches him, drops Strong, and hits the house call to win. I thought that this match, it kind of had some slow going throughout parts of it, but They really did get the crowd by the end of things. It just never, to me, reached that level to feel like a big world championship match. I thought the match was fine, but I also feel we've seen better matches that these two, I think, would be capable of having.
Yeah. I think one of Swerve's biggest challenges as a part of this current AEW title run is to step out of the conversation around Will Ospreay being the best wrestler in the company right now, and to a lot of people, the uncrowned, you know, rightful top person who should be AEW champion. It kind of felt that way in the MJF promo, where MJF saved his last target as Will Ospreay, mentioning, you know, like, that he is the rightful person to be best in the world. It almost kind of, in my opinion, almost made Swerve feel like a little bit of an afterthought, at least compared to Will Ospreay. And when we see Will Ospreay matches steal the show to the extent that they do with every time he appears on the show, Swerve has to do better than that. which is a really tough task for every single wrestler, for any wrestler to live up to. But that's the comparison point that I think people are going to make. And this was a good match. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was almost a classic Roddy match, you know, focusing on the back, but it wasn't necessarily, it didn't get to the level where I think you're raving about it afterwards and telling all your friends that they have to watch it. And again, that's a really, really tough bar to overcome. I certainly don't think the 5-day build, you know, necessarily helped at all. But it's still, like, I like the fact that we're getting these sort of showcases for Swerve. And maybe the thing that'll kind of change all of that is having Swerve actually face Will Ospreay and even beating Will Ospreay to perhaps lead to a series of matches, I hope, in the future. Anyway, getting ahead of myself. But that's maybe explaining sort of some of my thoughts that might be a bit aligned with yours.
Strength of the show, I really enjoyed the four-way. I would say that was the match I enjoyed the most on this show. The eight-man was a lot of fun as well. But I enjoyed a lot of the character stuff that they did in the various video packages, even to build up Roderick Strong in that one package. But the highlights were the Mercedes video and the Daniel Garcia thing that I thought was tremendous. Like maybe one of the best things they've done with Daniel Garcia, especially outside of the ring.
Sure, yeah. And you also loved the QR code video as well.
I mean, just reinventing things. I'm starting to just despise QR codes just in general.
Oh, man. Yeah. I definitely think they have a purpose, but like I at least in a wrestling sort of like find the hidden thing sort of context, it's feeling a bit tired at this point. I enjoyed actually a lot of these surprise elements of this show. Like the fact that they didn't announce a lot of these matches beforehand allowed me to kind of anticipate and appreciate them to a different level, and I kind of don't mind not knowing the whole card ahead of time.
All right, let's move on over, and we have feedback here for both Who Killed WCW and some Dynamite. So we'll go through the Dynamite feedback quickly, and then a reminder, we'll be flipping on over in just a couple of minutes to the Post Wrestling Cafe, and that will feature our rundown of Who Killed WCW.
Before that, mind if we get to a super chat?
I do mind. No, let's
okay.
Go.
All right, this one comes to us from the Dicky Bird himself. From Australia, who sends $8 all the way from the land down under, who says, "Hi, John, can you send me your size and mailing address? I have a shirt and shorts to send you. Are you aware, well, first of all, of what your size is, but what shirt, what shorts he might be referring to?"
I have seen an image of said shirt and shorts. Do you want to share with everyone what is going to be the rage this summer for all people?
Chomp-tees.com is where you can find the Post Wrestling button down shirt. Look at this thing. We never dared to put our logo like this on a button down shirt. We've only done t-shirts. We've only done hoodies, but a button down shirt. Look at this.
This is the evolution of wrestling merchandise.
Oh my goodness. Yes. In our signature blue, in our signature black, even we've also, of course, got shorts here. Would you wear these? You could rock these. Oh, these are beautiful. Look at them.
I couldn't imagine
going to the beach wearing this.
Why not?
Sitting in front of the lake by yourself. What a lovely gift potentially for a Post Wrestling listener. Chomp-tees.com. Thank you very much, Dickie, for the reminder.
All right, let's go here. We start off with Benjamin. For Dynamite, the learning tree stuff is clever. I'm not liking or disliking it, which is kind of the issue, because that's how I'm feeling about AEW overall. Something is missing or lacking from it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's going to be different for everybody. You're just not engaged, and you know, I hope as the weeks progress, you can pinpoint the exact reason why that might be. Let's go to Andrew from Cape Breton, who says, "I got to catch the show for the first time in a while due to work, and it was the good usual fare. I was on Reddit, and someone there posted a thread on the ELO score for everyone wrestling in AEW. And funnily enough, Roderick Strong, what is the ELO score? Do you know what that is?"
It's kind of like, from my understanding, it's like a strength of schedule kind of comparison.
Like how active they are?
I think so, yeah. Okay. I'm sure I will get a rundown of what it exactly is.
Okay. Funnily enough, Roderick Strong has the third best score under Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland. Whenever I post, it's usually me whining about the rankings, which seem dead once again. Yes, we didn't get an update for the past month, did we?
Oh, they're retired again.
Yeah, it seems like it. Okay. Whenever I post, it's usually me whining about the rankings, which seems to be dead again. But it feels like this would have been an example where using them would have made the title match tonight make more sense. I know it's probably not a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but I think many of the little things like that have affected how people view AEW. I also wasn't a fan of the stuff with Jericho. It seemed like they were going too over the top with the sarcastic attempted babyface, whereas in weeks prior, they were trying to be a bit more subtle. Overall, the show was fine, but here's a question. Do you think Tony Khan should let somebody else be the head booker? It feels like Tony has so many things he's doing at once that it's been affecting his booking for a while now. Would him letting someone else book give AEW a bump like WWE got when Vince left?
I mean, first of all, you have to come up with that person. Like, who is that person that you're...
From what we understand, isn't there a booking committee?
Well, there's definitely people that he has around him. But, I mean, he is the final creative voice that is going to be signed.
But how much do we actually know that, you know, would be different? He would still be the final voice even if he hired another booker.
Well, he's suggesting that Tony would not be that final person. Someone else would have the final say.
And I don't think that'll ever happen. As long as Tony,
I mean,
Khan
he was asked
owner.
About this not all that long ago, and it's not as though he like shot it down. But I mean, it's also I don't see it changing. At this juncture.
As long as Tony owns this company, as long as he seems as passionate about running a professional wrestling business as he does, he will always have final say. The question is, who is generating the ideas? Who's responsible for the overall direction of the show? And how responsible is the current booking committee for a lot of that? You know, could this sort of big change be made without necessarily removing Tony from that position? Could they give a bit more autonomy to the writers or the current bookers that they have? Because I don't ever see Tony relinquishing like that level of control.
Bruce writes, for the second week in a row, Dynamite felt very talk-heavy. That's not a bad thing in and of itself. The Willow, Garcia, and Danielson segments were great, but the Bucks, and especially Jericho, repeatedly doing the same limp shtick throughout, kept quashing any excitement those other serious elements build up. I'm not sure if Jericho's omnipresence was meant to be a legit attempt to capitalize on his attempt to pop quarters or meta commentary on such discussions, but either way, the learning tree jumped the shark for me tonight. Repetitive, unfunny, and now forcing Brian Keith to shoehorn in some awful lines. Make sure your baby respects Chris Jericho.
That's where we differ,
Bruce. Any one of those Jericho segments could easily have been replaced by the much more charming promo Mark Briscoe cut after the win, but it looks like that's a Twitter exclusive. The in-ring tonight was pretty enjoyable, if a bit predictable, the one exception being a shocking clean tap out by one of the women's division's top priorities in the decidedly unprotected Soraya. But no matter, apparently, as the match seemed like it was just the backdrop for more treading water with whatever is going on with Tony Storm, with the Tony Storm polycule. 2.5 swerving stunt grannies out of 5.
Thank you very much. Let's go up next to Jordan from the... by the way, you can hear Bruce tomorrow on Ask Away, as he has chosen Rewind Away this week. New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax 23 from 2013, day 4. One of the greatest shows of all time.
It's a pretty great show, and that will be the subject of Rewind Away on Thursday. 10 matches from Osaka in August of 2013.
And Bruce, of course, will be back to talk about Jon Moxley versus Evil, the lumberjack match the world will be watching this Sunday in the Post Wrestling Cafe with Karen Peterson. Let's go last up next to Jordan from the Bronx. He says, I must admit that this gas leak Jericho character is working for me. Gas leak?
Gas leak.
Okay, interesting. He's away from the main event, and the skits tonight were entertaining. MJF being back is a breath of fresh air. Rouge being in his first feud is fresh, and they can have some dope matches. While not on the level of Otis and Gable, the show built to Mariah May turning on Tony Storm has been fun. Swerve and Roddy was a fantastic match. Swerve's game continues to be elevated, and I laughed at the stunt granny at the end of the show dancing with him. In the past, Forbidden Door season felt like everything in AEW would be put on hold to get the crossover matches. This time, things feel better and integrated while focusing on future shows as well. Hopefully, this lull period that AEW is in can be turned around. And that's actually a really good point. You know, in years past, you would only get so much interaction between the world title program and the challenger. This year, they've opted to go with a world title match with two AEW roster members, and therefore you can have a lot more weekly TV directly building to that match.
And Cody from Maine, typical Dynamite tonight with solid wrestling, a lot of moving parts for storylines and upcoming matches. Was there anything I'm dying to rewatch? No, but there also wasn't anything that I wished I could have skipped either. I'm sure many felt that way about Jericho's segments, but I still find them entertaining. He posted clips of himself at a Rolling Stones concert on Instagram where he called the band members his branches, yet also chanted "Please retire" at Mick Jagger. No one can say he isn't committed to trying to make this work.
So the fact that I feel like almost every piece of comment tonight mentioned the Jericho thing is probably exactly what he was looking for, and he would probably deem that alone, you know, making tonight a success.
Jericho doing this stuff out in the wild, like at a Rolling Stones concert, sounds way more entertaining.
I haven't seen it, so yeah.
Nor have I.
Let's lastly go to Brian from New Jersey, who says, I thought this was the best overall Dynamite and best Dynamite crowd in weeks. Though nothing touched last week's Casino Gauntlet, there was a lot of good action here. The Forbidden Door build could have been stronger, but Brian Danielson gave the Owen Hart Cup and All In a lot of juice in just one promo.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for the feedback to tonight's Dynamite. Some good, some bad that came with the territory tonight from Loveland, Colorado. But the night is just beginning. If you want to, you are able to jump on over. We are going to be kicking things off in about 5 minutes with our look at episode one of Who Killed WCW. Brian Mann, he is pulling up in the post-wrestling limousine in his button-up shirt and is making his way into the esteemed green room. So we will be chatting with Brian momentarily about episode one. You can join us over there, and Way and I will be back. Rewind Away on Thursday, Rewind to SmackDown on Friday, and plenty of big shows coming up throughout the coming days. We've got Post Pro Res dropping. We have got Collision Course, Dominion Review, and Brandon Davey will be up after Battleground on Sunday night. So all of that can be found at postwrestling.com, and we will speak with you on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. postwrestlingcafe.com.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.